Okay, so sometimes when I'm meditating, my breath becomes almost imperceptible.
Right.
And then I'll notice, oh, I've stopped breathing. And I get startled.
Right.
And it's kind of a, you know, I'm kind of a little scared, and then my breath will get a little heavy.
Right.
And so I'm wondering how I can go beyond that.
Well, you see, you don't want to go beyond it. You just want to take the fear away from it, because this is what the samadhi state is. Again, we've talked about that thin veil between what we call life and death is relying on air, breath, not having to rely on it. When you get into samadhi, when you get into a deep meditative state, the breath becomes so subtle and you're not relying on it. It's happening. Respiration is happening. But what happens is the ego, the negative mind will say, hey, you know, this state, what it really means is it's like a dagger in its back and it doesn't want to bleed you. That's just going to pull you into the fear. I need to be breathing.
Right. And that's,
the same thing happens with mantra japa.
And that's what I mean by how do I go beyond the ego's fear of...
You just need to relax and you need to understand that this is a condition that if it's a problem, a recurrent problem, you pray for it. You say, Lord, you know, you be with me. And then you just, again, a lot of people, not a lot of people, a lot of scriptural advice is you use a mantra. And the purpose is, in the Vedas, they only had one mantra, was Om. In fact, Bhagavan, you know, there was a Chinese man that came to him once in like 1948, and he had a book. And he said, Bhagavan, you got to sign this. I wouldn't sign it. Finally, the Chinese man was really persistent. So Bhagavan just wrote Om, okay, which is a sound syllable for God. What happens is when you're doing, let's say, the Vedic practice, let's say Pranava mantra. In fact, we didn't talk about Pranava body, Bhagavan assuming a Pranava body. It's really interesting. And how the fact that the Pranava or Om is very much integrated with Bhagavan's life and especially the early years. There's a practice, what happens, a state of samadhi called ajapa japa. So what happens is, when you're using this technique of mantra and breath, there's three things going on in the meditation. One is, you're aware of the movement of air. Okay? Just the movement. Okay? Why? Because the nature of the mind is to move. Okay? It's its life breath. It must move. And its modus operandi of movement is thought. Okay? But you want to stop the thoughts. But you don't want to rile up the mind by making it think you're going to commit, you're going to kill it because you're bringing it to a still state. The breath is moving. You put your attention on the breath, just the movement of breath, in a sense tricks the mind. The ego tricks the ego. The ego says, okay, this is enough movement to sustain my life, so I'm going to go with it. And therefore, it doesn't feel the need to throw out a bunch of imaginative thoughts because it's moving. But what happens is the breath, since all these things we spoke about and all the scriptural references, it just starts to slow the capacity of the ego for throwing out thoughts. And so it gets caught. But so you're watching the movement air. Then you're listening to the sound of Om or whatever mantra you're using. Okay. The third thing is just straight from Viveka Chudamani and also Patanjali. You're aware that this is producing a vibration, a divine vibration. It's the practice of the presence of God. You can feel divinity because Om is like, what did Bhagavan say? O Arunachala, thou art the embodiment of Om. Okay? So you can feel it. You go to Arunachala, believe me, you can feel it. You know, you go away from it, you still feel it. You close your eyes, you're 12,000 miles away, sitting in Coral Springs, you can feel it. It doesn't leave you. Same thing with this. And so what happens is as your meditation, this form of meditation gets deeper and deeper, the breath becomes so attenuated, it becomes so slight, you can't catch it. But it's that breath now is that anamaya, it's part of the physical body. In the mind, you're hearing that sound. Okay, of the Om. So now you've left the breath, and now you're more with the sound of Om. You don't feel the anxiety that the breath is gone, and you don't startle and take breaths because you're still moving. The ego is still moving, feeling it's alive, it's preserving itself. When the breath slows down, it goes, hey, wait, so it gives you thoughts. I'm afraid, I need to breathe. But now you're still in the Om. What happens is then the Om becomes so attenuated, it starts to go into ajapa, it starts to become so faint. Now you're no longer aware of movement of air. You're no longer aware of a sound of Om. The only thing that remains is that divine presence. And as the, if you're meditating correctly, as the breath starts to go, this divine presence looms larger and larger. And then when the sound of the mantra goes away, it looms larger and larger. Then you merge into it and you're just steeped, that's samadhi. And so they do this for that reason, because you know that when you feel like breath is not moving, you know, they say the urge, the basic urge is, you know, the fear of death. It's self-preservation. It's hard work. It's really, the scriptures say this is the only real solid connection we have with the animal kingdom. That even though we're more, you know, capable and divine beings and present, they have divinity in themselves. We have the ability to perceive it and manifest it. They say they don't. But we're all, the commonality besides breath is the fact that fear of death, self-preservation is there. So when you start getting into a meditative state, this is hardwired into your whole complex. You feel, if I don't breathe, I could die. But you have to like substitute it with something that is vibrating with life, and that's how it's done. So they do that just for that reason, because try stopping your breath. Again, see, again, Bhagavan is not, when he's talking about retention of breath, he's talking about retention of the mind. And again, when the ego feels the mind is being controlled, it's going to explode. And it's going to make you think of things that you thought, I thought I was finished with that 20 years ago. You know? Okay?
When the crazy things come out, you know?
Yeah?
A lot of crazy things come out and you're kid.
We're crazy people.
Yeah.
You know, Paramahansa Yogananda said, we're all crazy. The problem is, I don't recognize your craziness. You don't recognize my craziness. We're all kind of like in one insane asylum, but we all, you know.
Well, it's important also to understand that the thoughts aren't you. So don't place too much importance on the thoughts that disturb you.
Yeah, exactly. What you do pay a lot of importance and attention on is the reaction you have with them.
Right.
See, again, Holy Mother Sri Sarada-devi, she was a great saint. Maybe she was considered a divine incarnation, like Sri Ramakrishna was. She said this. She says, as you move from life to life to life, experiences spool up in your mind like your mind is a spool of thread. And there's three different colors, black, red, and white. Tamil guna, rajaguna, and sattvaguna. Pure, action, sluggish, and ignorant. Black is, you know, tamil guna. White is sattvaguna. She said this. When you spool this stuff in these vasanas, these crazy things that even come from like past lives, as you're spooling this up, it stays with you. When you start doing spiritual practice, when you start taking up meditation, devotion, whatever, it starts unspooling the thread. But she said this, the way the thread went in is the same way it went out. It goes out. So we have what we call our awareness, is this window of perception. All of these vasanas and these latent tendencies, whether they be pure or impure, they're all there. The spiritual practice, the prayers, start, the heat starts to boil the water, so it starts to leave us. These bad tendencies, all these thoughts start to go. So when they're going, if they came in pure, they're coming out pure. If they went in dark, they're coming out dark. So you'll perceive them as they're coming through. Thing is, this is what Bhagavan talked about, the witness state. You just watch it. You don't engage in it. And so that's why, again, if you're watching the breath or you're preoccupying the movement and you're just letting these things just filter out, it has to come out. So it's a sign of spiritual progress that you're having these disturbing thoughts to say, listen, I'm grown up already. This is 25 years ago. You know, I got fired because someone lied about me in my workplace, and now I'm ready to kill the man over again 25 years later, you know, or whatever kind of.
You had to kill this guy.
Yeah, you know, but and so you just watch it. And this is the idea of karma. You don't create fresh karma. See, again, what the Bhagavan said, you remove yourself from everything except that aspect of the purity of the mind, and you just let it go. You just let it go. If you're having nothing happen, well then, chances are nothing is happening. But if you're having Mother Anandamayi used to say, you think you have trouble now? Wait till you take up real meditation.
And Bhagavan said, meditation means fight.
Yeah. You know, slog rhymes with God. So Bhagavan, they said, you know, I thought my life was great. I came to Bhagavan, yes, you know, there was all sorts of bliss in the initial kind of meeting, and then my life just became drudgery. And, you know, but then Bhagavan, it's interesting, Arthur Osborne said that, yes, okay, Bhagavan didn't have any spiritual injunctions other than a pure diet. That was the only rule, and it's maintained today at the ashram, purity of diet. But he said he was constantly putting injunctions into your heart that would slowly sprout out. And then you watched him. He led a life of an immaculate life, completely clockwork. You know, it's so frugal, so simple. Everything was like, you know, and then the disciples started to emulate and imitate that, you know, especially the clockwork aspect of it, the routine. He walked at a certain time, he ate at a certain time, he sat, he talked, he did. It was all by clockwork. There's a lesson there. Yeah. And also, it opens a window for grace. And really, the truth is, these days, you don't have to do a lot to get a lot of grace. Because, you know, they say, you know, there's a great story. There was in the 13th century, in Chartres Cathedral, there was a, you know, back in those days, in the 1200s, 1300s, the great saints, the sannyasis and saints and prophets and prophetesses, they lived in the big churches, like, you know, monks and nuns or just family, married men, married women. They just mostly lived there. And they were great ascetics. There was one named St. Andrew. He was called Andrew the Fool in Christ. He would go into samadhi and he would have visions.
And then, he was an Irishman.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, he was great. And thank God he was Irish, because when he spoke, he was really elaborate. and so he would go into these states and people would gather around. And when he'd come back to this quote unquote normal state that we're in, he would see what happened. So once, one of the greatest feast days, he went into this samadhi state. They said he was glowing with light, almost levitating for a long time. Then he kind of opened his eyes and they said, "Oh, Father, what did you see?" And he said, "I saw this." He said, "I was pulled out by a guardian angel out into space, as it were, and I saw the world, the globe, the earth, just hanging in space. And around the earth, there was a multitude of bright angels, just like archangels. And they were all holding golden spheres of light. And they were looking and peering down at the earth. And there, you could tell that as if an angel could be anxious. They wanted to come down to earth, but there was some rule, some wall, some law that was preventing them from coming in." He said, "Every now and then, one angel just lit up with light, darted down to earth. When he came back, the golden sphere of light was gone. And the angel was glorious and jubilant, and just really just glory. I was just so happy." So St. Andrew said, "I asked the guardian angel who was supporting me, 'What does this mean? What is this golden sphere of light? And what is holding them back from bringing it?' And the angel said, 'The golden spheres of light are the unending love of God toward man. Love of God, grace, compassion, just thirsting for God, for man.'" And then he said, "Well, great. Why are they not giving it?" And he said, "The Lord has created everything by rhythm." The Sanskrit word rhythm means law, rhythm. So, as we say, Brahman created the world, First it created the law, then it created, or the Dharma, then he created the physical manifestation. So the Dharma, the world would come and immediately fall into the law. So he said, God has made one law. And only by this one law, when it's satisfied, the angels give the love and compassion to mankind. And so St. Andrew says, what is the law? And the angel said, the law is to receive the love and compassion of God, man must first ask for it. Ask and you shall receive. So Bhagavan said, go around Arunachala. Ask Arunachala. You know, do this. So may we do it.